Okay, so before we get started, right, I already see some are turned to the first page, which is a bit of a spoiler, but that's okay. I wanted to pose, I guess, the question on the cover sheet for today's shiur. Shabbos, is it just for Jews? So anyone have any, you know, prior knowledge that they're bringing to bear, that they think about when they hear that prompt?
No, it's not just for Jews. I mean, even the Christians say that there's a Sabbath day.
Right, so if you want to talk about, you know, religious practice, or the Christians believe in a Sabbath, we've shown them talk about all, you know, whatever religion they're, you know, engaging with, oh, they also have certain notions of Shabbos. So people relate to a Shabbos, right, at least in the religious sense.
You'd be jealous of it.
Yeah, that's what I was
saying.
You
know, turn everything off.
Right. My non-Jewish friends are jealous. But I know if somebody's converting that they're not supposed to completely keep Shabbos? Am I remembering that right?
Okay. So two different points. Great points, right? First of all, it's notable, I think, that Shabbos is something that seems to be desirable, right? Not every aspect of, you know, religious life, you know, at least on the surface, seems like something, oh, I really wish I could have this and copy it for myself, but Shabbos definitely seems to fall on that list historically, including in our era, just having a day off and having a, you know, even what they call a digital Shabbat is something very desirable. But then, you're right, there is a certain limitation on keeping Shabbos that you mentioned. Prospective converts generally don't keep full Shabbos, even as they practice adopting other mitzvot. And we'll see that there's this limitation on non-Jews, let's say, for the time being, though that's a category we'll add some texture to in a moment, keeping Shabbos. And that, I think, on the surface should be a little bit surprising. Right, because if you think about the major events that Shabbos reminds us of, or that Shabbos relates to, so what are the major connections that we have to Shabbos? Shabbos connects to creation, and what else?
Mitzrayim.
And Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, right, the two basic major themes. So Yetzias Mitzrayim, obviously, is not something that's related to other nations. That's not a uniquely Jewish experience.
Creation, but is Mitzrayim reminding us of Shabbos, or Shabbos reminding us of
So it depends on which version of the Aseret Hadibrot you look at, right? In one version of the Aseret Hadibrot in Parsha Yitro, so it references, you know, a reminder of creation. And then in the one in the beginning of Va'etchanan, in the beginning of Sefer Devarim, it references it's a reminder of Yetzias Mitzrayim, right? It's not that Yetzias Mitzrayim came to remind us of Shabbos. Shabbos didn't, you know, really exist yet. There's a midrash about Moshe teaching, you know, having Paro arrange for a day off for the slaves, so that kind of a proto-Shabbos that's developed. But Shabbos as an institution doesn't really exist until that point. So I understand that, you know, half of Shabbos, the Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim portion, doesn't seem to relate to Gentiles. But creation, I mean, everyone's, you know, one of God's creation, so it seems a little bit strange that there's this resistance that we're going to try to encounter in just a few moments. One more point before we start, and if you've already looked at the first source, I'll ask you to reserve judgment on this. But this theme does get echoed in davening, this idea that Shabbos is only or uniquely for Jews in some way. And are davening on Shabbos, anyone know where? Where in Shabbos davening do we explicitly, there are a few places where it might be implicit, but explicitly reference the idea that Shabbos is just for Jews? All right, we're going to, you know, unwrap the present. It is in the Shabbos Shemona Esrei for Shacharis. So we have the first three brachot like we normally do in a regular Shemona Esrei, and then we have the bracha known as Kedusha Hayom, the bracha that is associated with the sanctity of the day. And in the middle of that bracha, we have this very direct line. V'lo netato Hashem Elokeinu legoyei ha'aretzot. Hashem did not give Shabbos to the nations of the lands. And our king did not give it as an inheritance to those who serve idols, so idolaters. And in our rest, the uncircumcised should not dwell. So we're, you know, three different formulations, three different ways of saying Shabbos is just for us. You've given it to us in love. To the seed of Jacob, who you've chosen. So it's a theme that gets mentioned in davening. Some of the commentaries on the Siddur find it in other places in Shabbos davening. But it's a theme in davening, and as we'll see shortly, a theme in halacha. So let me turn this into pose it as a question. If there is a limitation, if there is a resistance to non-Jews, to idolaters, again, we'll be vague about the category for the moment, keeping Shabbos, why should that be? Why is that something we would want to discourage? Right, I understand maybe you wouldn't be obligated. Let's say they're not part of the Yetziyat Mitzrayim experience, so they wouldn't have an obligation. But why discourage it? Why is it bad?
Intermingling.
Okay. The concern is that, like, that Jews and Gentiles will intermingle because we have shared rituals or shared experiences. Okay, so right, one possible perspective is to say that we're concerned about blurring of societal boundaries, we could call it. Okay.
So they're practicing, but they have to break it.
What do you mean that it's very, like, halacha-based?
I'm saying it seems like there's... I'm not sure what the reason is. I never thought about the question, but it's an excellent question. But, you know, there's a reason why somebody outside of our family isn't supposed to keep Shabbos as in its entirety.
The concept of Shabbat started before there were rules of what is allowed and what's not allowed. The concept of Shabbat started creation. It wasn't until the time of the Mishkan that we knew what halacha said you can't work meant working.
Okay, so the question I'm sensing, you know, alluded to from both of you is the question of what counts as keeping Shabbos.
Right.
Right, and we'll see, it's not actually so obvious. Right, when we think of it, the way that we relate to this, or we encounter this halacha, is when someone's in the process of converting, so they, you know, the Beit Din will say, okay, every Shabbos, make sure to, you know, turn a light on, or write your name down, or do some kind of malacha that normally for us would be prohibited, but do that to fulfill this halacha of not keeping Shabbos. But it's not obvious that that should be exactly what we mean when we say that non-Jews shouldn't keep Shabbos. So if the concern is an intermingling and a blurring of boundaries, so then, I think that makes a lot of sense. So the concern is that they're going to keep our Shabbos, and then the lines are going to get kind of fuzzy between us and them, and we want to make sure those lines are pretty strong. We have other halachot that relate to that as well. I think there's a more powerful formulation of this idea, though. We see in a couple of midrashim, and one midrash is just presented as an idea, and then in another midrash it's really developed thematically. It's not just about the sense of intermingling, but as we'll see, it's a sense of trespassing. The Midrash in the Mechilta, in source number 2. This is a Midrash from the period of the Tanaim. So this is, you know, the same era of the Mishnah. It's a scholarly debate as to whether the Mishnah or the Midrash was developed first, or whether they were developed kind of simultaneously. But regardless, so the Midrash here, commenting on the parsha of Vishamru v'nei Yisrael et haShabbat, we are familiar with it from Kiddush on Shabbos morning. So it begins that parsha, Vishamru v'nei Yisrael et haShabbat, which Zeh Husha Amar Shehayav Rabbi Natan Omer, Chilal Alav Shabbat Achat, Kedei Sheyishmor Shabtot Harbeh. So there's one interesting halacha, which is not the subject for today, that we're generally allowed to break Shabbos to save a life because of this calculation. You'll get more Shabboses out of you if you're alive than if you don't make it today. But then the halacha that's relevant for us, Beini Uvein B'nei Yisrael Oti Le'olam. And the Midrash says, Beini uvein bnei Yisrael, velo beini uvein umot haolam. It's between God and us, and not between God and the rest of the nations. It sounds like something about Shabbos. It doesn't pick on exactly what theme we're talking about, but something about Shabbos is a unique experience or a unique relationship or a unique oat, as the pasuk is about to call it, between us and Hashem that should not be past, and inherent reasons, not just because of a concern of intermingling, but because of it would be wrong for them to experience Shabbos. And the Midrash in Dvarim Rabbah, this is an Agadic Midrash, develops it with a really nice mashal. Much like many of the Midrashim in Dvarim Rabbah, and a lot of other Midrashic collections as well, they begin with a halacha, very much like a contemporary Shabbos Shuvah or Shabbos Hagadol drasha. You begin with a halacha, and then from there you kind of spin off and talk about whatever philosophic idea you want to talk about. So it starts with this halacha. Oh, if you're walking on Erev Shabbos and the sun's about to set, so what do you do with all the stuff you're carrying? Oh, you should give it to a non-Jew. And the Gemara says, okay, but why shouldn't they also keep Shabbos? Right? Isn't it a value for everyone? So jumping to the, I think the end of the fourth, let's do the end of the third line, because we'll need that line as well a little bit later. V'amar Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Yossi, the son of Chanina, said, "Ovid kochavim, sheshamar et haShabbat, an idolater who keeps Shabbos, Adshelo kibol alav et hamila, who has not yet been circumcised, chayev bita, is obligated to the death penalty. Whoa. Right? It's one thing to say they don't have to do it, and it's another to say that they can't do it, but it's a third to say that they're going to get the death penalty for it. That's something that we'll really have to unpack in just a moment. It'll come up in the Gemara again in just a little bit. But we'll put that on pause for a moment. Lama, why? Shalom nitzavu aleha, because they're not commanded on it. Okay, but the Gemara, the Midrash recognizes the inadequacy of that explanation and doubles down. Umare ita lomar ovid kochavim shamar et shabbat chayav mita. Okay, they're not commanded in it, but why are they obligated, liable to the death penalty? Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, we're in the third line from the bottom in the Hebrew. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba said, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, benohag shaba olam. It is customary, or it is appropriate. Minhag is too soft a word here. It's appropriate practice. It's appropriate manners. It's appropriate decorum. Melach umatrona yoshvim umasichem zeim zeh. If a king and a matrona, it's a bit of a hard word to translate. The translation that I found said matron, other translations say queen. It's clearly some high dignitary at the very least, if not someone the king has an intimate relationship with. So a king and his bride, his queen, are sitting and speaking. Misha ba'u machnis asmo b'neihem einu chayev mita. And someone just, you know, slides right into the table with them. The king and the queen are having a discussion, you know, in their palace, in their chambers, and you walked in, that would be worthy of the death penalty. And that's the mashal, says the Midrash, for non-Jews keeping Shabbos. Us in Shabbos, kacha Shabbos hazo bein Yisrael levein HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shabbos is this conversation that we're having with God. And if you get in the way of that conversation, if you try to participate in it in a way that you're not supposed to and breach boundaries, then you're liable to the death penalty. And it quotes the same pasuk that earlier Midrash quoted, Beinu Vein Bnei Yisrael. And that's the justification for the Shechiyuv Mita. So the Midrash is presenting a very essential perspective on this issue. And it's one of the things that's really echoed in the psukim, in the tefillah that we mentioned, right? There's something categorically inappropriate about keeping Shabbos. It's brazen. It's crass. You're trying to intervene in a personal relationship. That seems to be the concern that Midrash has. It's an interesting one, because you don't think of Shabbos, you know, we think of Shabbos in terms of obligations, but one thing that hopefully a two-year-long series of Shiurim on Shabbos on Sunday mornings should disabuse us of is the notion that Shabbos is just a list of prohibitions, but it's more about creating an experience and a relationship and is both symbolic of and generative of that relationship, so it represents the connection with God and creates the connection with God. And there's so much to Shabbos that is not just the list of do's and don'ts, and that's the thing that they can't have. And so if we relate to the question, we asked one of the questions that we'll unpack a few of in a little bit. So this implies that the issue that we're dealing with is the issue of malacha on Shabbos. I don't care if they're resting. I don't care if they spend all day at work, or if they take a day off, or if they go on vacation, but I care if they keep our Hilchos Shabbos. Maybe I would even care if they keep our positive mitzvot of Shabbos. Perhaps I could even imagine someone saying, don't keep the malachas, don't refrain from labor, and don't light Shabbos candles. Those are also part of the experience of Shabbos that you can't have. And don't have pseudo-Shabbos. It's hard to not have a meal, but so you can imagine this being expanded. Yeah.
Are we supposed to conclude from that we're never allowed to invite a non-Jewish person to our home for Shabbos?
So that's a really interesting question, right? How far do we want to expand this idea? Right. So the most narrow form would be to say it's about the halachot of Shabbos. It's about the laws. But not to say anything about the experience. If you want to talk about the spirit of this Midrash, so the spirit of the Midrash might be a little bit more opposed to that practice, that really Shabbos is not something that we share. Shabbos is an intimate experience. You don't let people into your intimate experiences in your lives. Those are meant to be singular. And so you want to have non-Jews over, you have them for other occasions. You have them for legal holidays when everyone's off, but you don't necessarily have them for Shabbos. Now, I'll note, this is not the only perspective on this prohibition. And I also will note that that was not halacha l'maisa advice, and there's a whole literature about when you invite non-Jews to your house, so how do you make sure that the food is kosher, the wine is kosher, you know, all of the issues that are associated with it. So
let's say you do all that, But, you know, we live in a non-Jewish world. Some of us, I worked in corporate America in a non-Jewish world my whole life. And I felt like that was something that helped build relation. I mean, if people were interested, understanding, exactly. So that's why I asked the question, because I did it not all the time, but with people I got close with, and it always it had positive effects.
But even those people weren't those people that you invited, they weren't keeping all of Shabbos.
No.
So
that's why. So on a halachic level, I think the simplest answer, the simplest explanation is, it's one thing to say they don't keep the halachot of Shabbos, but to come for a meal is not a tremendous deviation.
Okay. Just checking in.
Yeah.
Still friends with some of those people.
It's meant so that there is this recognition that they aren't a part of this special intimate relationship.
Right. And that's why when we talk about someone who keeps just one avera, you know, one malacha on Shabbos, that's already enough to breach that, to mark that space, to say, you're not doing the same thing we're doing, because you're writing on Shabbos and we're not. You're building on Shabbos, we're not.
Questions could come up at the meal that relate to, you know.
Right. So part of it gets back to the question that we alluded to earlier about how firm we want boundaries to be in general. And that's a very global question in Jewish life, right? Do we want to have high walls and be insular and, you know, mostly relate to our own, or do we want to be more open and broad in the world? So it's a very global question. This would be one local place where it would come up. But, you know, I could see someone saying, no, I don't invite people on Shabbos because for me, Shabbos is about keeping up those boundaries, right? I don't want to be, you know, totally, you know, fluid and connected with broader society. You could definitely imagine someone, you know, having that response. In rabbinic life, it's always a tension between you want to invite congregants, you want to invite students, and like have them and share an experience with them, and you also want space that's not public, a space where you can just be with your family. So I think that tension is very much, you know, on a microcosm of that broader issue. But all of this is taking the Midrash at face value and saying the Midrash is the dominant theme. It's the theme that's not emphasized as much in the halachic literature, because there's also a passage in the Gemara, which usually gets the last word in these sorts of things. So we'll see the passage in the Gemara in source number 5 in Sanhedrin. Source 4 is great. It's a passage from Philo. Philo was a late Second Temple, late Bayit Sheni Jewish philosopher and writer. He lived in Alexandria, spoke Greek, and was one of the first, like, you know, Jewish thinkers who really worked to integrate, you know, then contemporary secular Greek wisdom with Torah, for all the benefits and downsides associated with that project.
And they say he was Shomer Shabbos. I mean, they do.
They do? I don't know much about Philo's background, so it could be that.
Yeah, I mean, they say he was a practicing Jew.
Right, so he certainly writes in.
But somebody who did try and integrate the, you know,
right.
System.
I'm always interested in learning about these historic figures. Like, if they were alive now, you know, would they be modern Orthodox? Are they, like, you know, are they basically the same as what we're doing? Just they're doing Greek and we're doing, you know, English? Could be. I didn't know who he was from, so that's very interesting.
That's Rev. David Katz from Baltimore, who's a historian.
Yeah.
And gives shiurim. I recently heard him talking about
it. Okay. So really interesting, then. Yeah. And so just his evaluation of this is quite interesting. He quotes the contemporary practice. He says, you'll never find a city, you'll never find a culture that has not adopted this idea of a Shabbos. Josephus as well, I didn't present the source here, but Josephus as well makes this point that it's a very common practice. And they both evaluate it very positively. Look at the impact that Torah law, that Jewish law has on the world. But the Midrash, as we noted, might push back a little bit that, you know, it clearly is very appealing. It was appealing 2,000 years ago and it's appealing now. And the Midrash is saying, but let's pump the brakes a little bit and maybe we want to be hesitant. Right. So the question, as always, is how do you balance all the factors, right? I think everyone agrees you should be, you know, impacting, you know, broadly, and everyone also agrees that there have to be some boundaries. So where do we draw the lines? But the Gemara Sanhedrin doesn't care about any of this, I think. I think the simplest reading, and I'll read it and explain it in light of Rashi's commentary in source 6, is a completely different approach. The Gemara here quotes Reish Lakish. V'amar Reish Lakish, goy sheshavat chayav mita, a Gentile who Shabbos is. Who keeps Shabbos is obligated the death penalty. And it doesn't quote the pasuk "Beini uvin b'nei Yisrael otila olam." That is a special connection that we have with God. Instead, it quotes a pasuk from Bereishis, right after the Mabul. It's interesting. Yom v'layla lo yishbotu. Day and night they shall not rest or cease or desist from labor. Now, the pasuk in its original context seems to be referring to the cycles of the seasons. God is making a promise. I did a Mabul once, and I see that this is the way people are, so I'm not going to do a Mabul again. And the cycle of the seasons, the Kais v'choref, Kor v'chom, Yom v'layla lo yishbotu. The summer and winter, and hot and cold, day and night, they're all just going to, the world is going to function the way it's supposed to, and there won't be radical deviations from nature. But Rashi notes that this pasuk also is interpreted, at least in this Gemara, as referring to human beings, that they also shall not rest. And the Gemara then says, the Amar Mar, Azhara Shalahan Zohi Mitatan, the prohibition is the Chiyuv Mita. So first I need a pasuk to tell me that is prohibited, Lo Yishbotu, do not rest. And then there's a general principle when it comes to the mitzvot B'nai Noach, that anything they're prohibited from doing is worthy of the death penalty. So both, you know, Jews and Gentiles have a prohibition in halacha on theft. For us, theft is not a capital crime, but in the system of B'nai Noach, it is a capital crime. Or at least it can be. Gets to interesting, you know, B'nai Noach. Noach had questions that we may touch on, but I'll try to leave on the side because of some of the complications. And then Ravina adds one final point, and we'll try to see what picture we're seeing here. Amar Ravina, afilu sheni b'shabbos. Even on Monday. Even on the second day of the week. So it's not if they keep our Shabbos. It's if they, even if they keep any day of the week as a Shabbos. Seems to be a problem. So, first of all, this Gemara is distinguished from the Midrash because it doesn't mention any of this relationship with God business. It's all very nice, it's very important, but that's not what's dominant in this passage in Sanhedrin. And the pasuk it quotes is different. The pasuk it quotes is, day and night you should not rest. What do you think that's about? What value is pushing back on rest? Might be hard to extrapolate from the pasuk on its own. Rashi draws this out very clearly for us. I won't read it inside. But Rashi suggests that the value here is the value of work. The concern is, don't rest, because what you should be doing with your time is working. And that's why, says Ravina, it doesn't matter what day you do it, right? If you do it on Shabbos, the issue is that you're co-opting a Jewish religious experience. Even Rashi says Sunday, well, Sunday is a Christian day. That would be a religious observance. But I don't care if it's a religious observance. Even a regular weekday that you take off, that you don't do any work, that is a problem. And apparently it's a capital problem, a capital crime. Because we shouldn't be working.
Work is considered the malachot that we consider work on Shabbat.
Ah, fantastic. Does this sound like it's talking about the malachot? Not necessarily. It's not coming in the context of psukim about Shabbos, about psukim that talk about doing malacha. It sounds like it's about work in general. Right? When you first teach the malachot to people, so you give them the example of carrying your couch up and down the steps. I've heard this example many times in my educational history. Right? You could carry your couch up and down the steps in your house as much as you want on Shabbos, and you violated no malacha. It's, you know, burdensome. It might be a derabanan in terms of, you know, of doing too much work, whatever, or the risk of taking it outside. But you haven't done a malacha. Because malacha is defined as certain kinds of creative activity. The kind that God engaged in when he created the world. But from the perspective of this halacha, it seems like you'd want to say that the concern is about them doing labor, the work that we do in the world. Going to your job, taking care of your house, doing things that are not creative necessarily, but constructive, useful, just the labor that we value. That's one really interesting difference between the Midrash and the Gemara. Now, the Midrash seems to care about malacha, but the Gemara seems, at least on the surface, to be more interested in labor. Don't take a day off. This is a very hard thing, I think, to wrap our heads around. I think We usually think of leisure as a very nice general value, not to be working ourselves too hard, to give ourselves a little bit of a break. We experience on our Shabbos, and we have a Sunday, which is very convenient. So we get, you know, religious rest, and then we get work rest also. And it's very convenient. What the Gemara, I think, is suggesting, which is a really, you know, challenging idea, and figuring out where it falls in our scheme of values, is something we have to think about, that maybe we take the idea of leisure too glibly. You know, it's a Sunday, so we should all be going to our homes after this class and doing something useful. What a terrible waste of time to fill in the blank with whatever you feel guilty about wasting your time on. I don't want to judge. I didn't want to say anything, but someone else said it. So...
That's not pleasure. No,
that's a waste of time.
That's suffering. So that's a really interesting contrast. And if this Gemara is right, then this is a value. And the other, you know, challenging thing about this Gemara is that it sounds like this value applies to us also. This is a pasuk from the end of Parsha Noach. There's no division between Noachides and non-Noachides yet, by definition. We're dealing with the period of Noach and his family. So not only is this value applicable by B'nai Noach, it's also applicable by us. We have an overriding value called Shabbos that tells us, okay, normally you would never be allowed to take a day off. Not to never break at all, but never take a day off. But you have Shabbos that says, okay, you have to take a day off. This leads to interesting literature that I didn't present any of because it gets us too into the weeds of Parshanut. But there's a tradition that we know. You've seen Midrashim, Rashi's about this all the time. About how our Avot kept Halacha. They kept all 613 mitzvot. Your description of Avram even keeping the rabbinic commandments. It's a really interesting tradition. But some of the Achronim ask, how could the Avot have kept all the mitzvot? There's a prohibition in keeping Shabbos. And even though they wanted to accept upon themselves all the mitzvot, they were in fact B'nai Noach. They in fact had not been commanded in Shabbos. There was no supererogatory value of Shabbos that they could appeal to. So, how could they keep Shabbos? And there are a bunch of answers thrown around to this question. It's sort of reminiscent of the Beit Yosef's question about Hanukkah, why we keep 8 days of Hanukkah, even though there were only 7 miraculous days, and 1 of the days was just natural. The oil lasting 1 day was perfectly normal. And there are about, I think, books of 1,000 answers to this question. So this feels like one of those questions where, you know, it has to be wrong, the question is why, and we find different approaches. But that question is only cogent according to the view from the Gemara. Because according to the view from the Gemara, this prohibition exists from the beginning. It's always problematic to be wasteful with our time and to not be working. And so for the Avodah, it would have been problematic as well. According to the Midrash, that question doesn't get off the ground, because whatever connection they have with God, it justifies them keeping Shabbos. There's no relationship with God to be breached. No one else has a right to Shabbos more than the Avot. So it's interesting literature that arises coming out of that question as well. So these two approaches, I think, represent two major poles in this conversation. One that focuses on the uniquely Jewish, malacha-based, Shabbos-based experience, where we have an experience of Shabbos, and no one else should interfere or trespass that experience. And on the other hand, this value of constant productivity. It's always doing something useful with your time. And that's without getting exactly into the value associated with that. It's the value of work that it keeps us out of trouble, keeps us busy. It's the value of work that almost, not the value of it, but that is a punishment. Adam, after sinning and eating from the Eis HaDaat, is told, "Bezeira pechatocha lechem," you'll only be able to sustain yourself with work. But it's a punishment, but maybe it's a punishment that we're mentally lean into. Or maybe it's about our more global responsibility to contribute positively to the world. We're told, "Le'ovda'u l'shomra" is our purpose, to serve the world and to protect it. "Pruervu milu'at ha'aretz v'chivshua," you know, fill the world and control it, and take control over it. The Rav in Lonely Man of Faith develops this theme of Adam 1, whose job it is to conquer nature and develop sciences. So there are different values we can associate with work. Whatever the value is, seems to be a second side of this distinction. Do you have any other differences? Let's leave that be for now. Okay. Not to say that our earlier approach does not appear in the sources, because the Meiri takes a sort of not utilitarian approach, but approach is mostly interested on boundaries. The Meiri in source number 7, we should read this together. Ben Noach Sheri Inuhu Mitchased. If we see a Ben Noach who is becoming pious, is the word he's using. I can't tell if he's using it positively or negatively. The Koveya La'atzmo Yemei Menucha, Shabbos or Yom Tov. And he makes for himself days of rest, Shabbos or Yom Tov. We're not getting into the question now of whether the Gentiles ought to keep Yom Tov. Right? It might relate to some of these motives and not others. Yom Tov is also a special connection we have with God, but at the same time, maybe not as relevant to the idea of days of rest, categorically. Like, Shabbos is defined as a day of rest, in a way Yom Tov maybe is not, and more malachot are allowed. So, without we're getting into the Yom Tov issue, he says, Ra'ui le'anesh, it's worthy of punishment, afal pisha eno neharag, even though he's not killed. He thinks the death penalty mentioned in the Gemara is a hyperbolic statement. They are worthy of a death penalty, but we would never give it to them. And the Rambam says the same thing. So he's not on his own in this regard. But jumping down to the end, the fourth line, four words from the beginning of the line, Shezeh, if you do this, if he makes for himself a special day of ritual observance, Shezeh nira kemishuhu mibnei amenu, he'll look like a Jew. He'll be able to pass as a Jew. V'yilmadu acherim himenu, and others will learn from him. So we, the Jewish community, prohibit other people from behaving like we do, with regard to Shabbos, at least, because of that concern of the blending of boundaries. We don't want it to be possible for someone to pass as a Jew, if they're not actually Jewish, by keeping Shabbos, or by keeping Yom Tov. And so we make this limitation. And so if we go back to some of the questions that distinguish the Midrash from the Gemara, we see that the Meiri will, you know, find interesting stances on them. He'll probably care more about malacha than he'll care about general useful labor, which is more permitted to us. But he might also care even about Shabbos meals. Yeah, because if you're at a Shabbos table and, you know, if they dress the part, or if the dress, you know, figuring out the dress is a factor here as well, but if you're sitting at a Shabbos meal and you're singing Zmiros and you're not doing any work at the Shabbos table, you could pass as a Jew. Maybe the Meiri would even be bothered by someone keeping a partial Shabbos. Anything that lets you pass in Jewish society seems to be something the Meiri is opposed to. For all the concerns that boundary breaking have. We're going to learn from them, you know, we'll see them keeping Shabbos, and then we'll see them go to McDonald's. So, what looks like...
So,
it relates to Amar's Ayin concern, or there are even more, you know, potent concerns, right? So we would know if someone goes to McDonald's, that already is a, I understand you can't do that. But there are all sorts of halacha that you learn halacha from how other people behave. And if someone is not actually doing what they're meant to do, but they pass as someone who is, so it makes it very difficult to learn from the communal education. Finally, there's a... Please. Yes, that's right. Right, there was a story that came out a year or two ago, I think, in Israel, where you had families
that's
like
very
that.
Very much what this.
Right, that's certainly the spirit of where the Meiri is going. Right. Now, of course, you could, you know, push back. How do you know what someone's doing behind closed doors? Right. If I, you know, turn on a light once, but in public I keep Shabbos. Like, is that enough to fulfill the halacha here? And okay, you keep Shabbos, but what if you don't wear tzitzis or you don't? You're not concerned about kashrus, or you don't daven. So there are all sorts of ways that this, you know, breaks down. But Shabbos is one of the, you know, very obvious Jewish social markers. And if I see you at Shul on Shabbos, I'm not necessarily probing what you're doing in your private life in the week. So there's certain logic what the Meiri is proposing here. I think there's a fourth angle which really builds on the Midrash that the Rambam takes. The Rambam uses this really strong language. It, I think, builds on the language of the Midrash, but in a slightly different direction. Klalo shel davar, after quoting the halacha that a Gentile is not allowed to keep Shabbos or learn Torah, which is an interesting halacha, a related conversation could be had around that issue. He says in the middle of the second line, in verse number 8, klalo shel davar, the principle of the matter, ein manichen otan lechadesh dat, v'lasot mitzvot latzman. We don't let people make new religions. You could be Jewish, you could be a Ben Noach, you could be a bad Ben Noach and not keep anything. But we don't let you make up new religious rituals and experiences on your own. So if they were to have a Shabbos on any day of the week, if they had a Shabbos, or if they had a Sunday, which is the Sabbath, or some of the Rishonim talk about Arabs having a Friday. I don't know what contemporary Muslim halakha has to say about this, but whatever day you choose as your religious ritual day, that's going to be a problem.
So I have a problem with that.
Okay.
Because look how people kept Judaism in secret when they were, when you look at our history, people were keeping traditions alive by doing them in a different and secretive way. And some of this, because they did it, it lasted through generations. So I actually,
can I ask just for a clarification? Meaning, for the Rambam is not talking about whether a Jew under oppression, or how a Jew under oppression should deal with that. He's saying, what? Right, but I mean, besides that, first of all, there are exigent circumstances, and rules are you know, there's a legitimate spectrum in halakha for modifying rules for extreme circumstances. But also, he's talking about Gentiles. He's not talking about Jews. Right? The idea is that Judaism is not happy when other religions that look kind of Jewish spring up, and people start becoming adherents of those religions.
So that has nothing to do with my question.
That's what I'm trying to understand, unless there's something I'm missing.
Well,
so the Rambam doesn't say what the problem is exactly. He doesn't say whether the concern is, well, they'll look too Jewish and then people will convert from one to the other, or maybe on just more essential grounds. Like, we have a religion that we believe is true. We have a relationship with God that we're fighting for, and it's not... We're not excited when other people start just making up new religions. We know how we're supposed to serve God. God told us. So let's do the best we can, and let's try to encourage others to do the best they can. But not to celebrate when other religions, you know, come up and they borrow practices that look kind of like ours. Rambam would read Philo and he'd be disgusted. Oh, it's so great that all the Greeks and all the Seleucids and all the Romans have, you know, Shabbos-like practices. That's terrible. They should be doing what they're meant to do, which is either keep the mitzvah b'nei Noach, which are the basic standard for non-Jews, or they should become Jewish if they want. But this halfway place, the Rambam, I don't think would be very happy with at all. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. You had a second question.
No, that's okay. The second part of my question had to do, like, in the end, we answer to Hashem. So what we do, you know, like you were saying, what we do in our house versus, I mean, isn't that true? Yeah.
I certainly think so. I think more about what Hashem thinks about me than others.
That should be our bar and how we observe, don't you think? Because that's who we're answering to, Hashem.
Absolutely. I think Rambam would tell a Gentile the same thing, right? Don't start making up religions based on what you find meaningful, what you like or don't like about Judaism. Hashem told you, you're either meant to be one of us and keep all the mitzvot,
or not,
and then do what you're meant to do. You have 7 mitzvot. They're for you. Enjoy them. Be a wonderful Ben Noach, and that's exactly what Hashem wants, because that's the person you care about. A being, not a person. Okay, so that, I think, you know, rounds out part one, which is the right amount of time for part one, about this question of the nature of this prohibition. One more observation about the Rambam. For the Rambam, it's very important, I think, that the motivation be religious. His concern is not creating a new religion. I don't think Rambam would say taking a day off from work is this terrible thing, as long as it's not a religious choice. If I want a day off because I'm tired, because I want to have fun, because I'm lazy, you know, it might not be the greatest virtue in the world, but it's not this bad. What's bad is trying to create a new religious stripe. That, I think, is what Rambam's objecting to. The motivation would make a big deal, make a big difference for him. So, to round this out, we had 4 perspectives on this question, on what the nature or the root of this prohibition or this limitation on Gentiles keeping Shabbos, one associated with our unique relationship with Hashem and their trespass of that relationship, B'nei Uvein B'nei Yisrael, the Midrashic approach. Rashi had an approach that was about emphasizing the value of work, and just you can't justify taking a day off unless you have a strong religious motivation for it. So otherwise, a Gentile shouldn't do it. it's appropriate to be engaged in labor. The Meiri had his practical concern, lest there be this blurring of lines and boundaries and people will be able to pass as one another in a way that's not appropriate. And the Rambam is concerned about creating new religions, that it shouldn't be possible to create new religious practices, new religious groups. We have a Torah, follow that as best you can in whatever group you belong to. Now, the area where this becomes, I think, very interesting is, but we have a bunch of exceptions to this rule. They're all in the same, you know, family of exceptions, and they have to do with Gentiles who are not completely other, but ones who are in closer connection with us in different ways. I was vague a little bit earlier about the categories. Is it Gentile? Is it idolater? Is it goy? Is it oved kochavim? Part of it is that it's hard to tell because a lot of texts that we have would have been censored. So if I had a text that said, non-Jew shouldn't do this, oftentimes a Christian censor would have erased that and wrote, an idolater shouldn't do this, but not a Christian, obviously. They can do what they want. So it's very hard to know what the original text said. And then in the spirit of the thing, I think it would make a lot of sense to distinguish between those who are, you know, closer to being one of us and those who are further away. And I'll bring three very brief examples of these kind of liminal edge cases. One has to do with conversion candidates. Right, someone who wants to become Jewish. So we could run through the reasons, but I don't think it's such a terrible breach, right? They clearly recognize the significance of the relationship between God and Bnei Israel through Shabbos. That's why they want to become a Jew. There's at least a positive religious motivation to justify taking a day off. It might not be enough to justify not working, but at least it's in the right direction. It's clearly a religious motive. We're not concerned about blurring boundaries so much. They're in the process of becoming one of us, so I imagine they're not interested in trying to trick us. And they're trying to invent a new religion. They want to be part of our religion. So on the surface, it seems like someone who is a committed conversion candidate should be able to keep Shabbos. And there is a view in the Rishonim, in source number 9, that the Tosfos Yeshanim says this. Mainstream practice is not to say this. Mainstream practice is to say that they should still, you know, do some nominal Shabbos violation until the moment of their conversion. Rabbi Akiva Eger in source number 10 makes that argument. My understanding is that that's contemporary practice as well. Now, you could push back and say, well, maybe they should do some constructive work to fulfill Rashi's interpretation also, you know, just to be safe, not just doing a malacha, because that seems to be the biggest problem that remains for someone who's planning to convert, the issue of, you know, laziness and not working when you could or should be. So maybe you should, you know, send a couple of work emails and, you know, turn on the lights and write your name. But there's the conventional practice is to assume we're focusing on malacha. But a more profound case is not someone who's a candidate, right? I could see hesitation about a conversion candidate because you never know if they're going to go through with it. There's always a last-minute opportunity to back out. But there's a really interesting historical case about converts who have begun the conversion process and I just haven't finished it yet. I brought a summary of it in source number 11. There's a whole literature here. But Rabbi Yochanan Adler, one of the YU Rashi Yeshiva, wrote about this incident. In 1848, there was a convert, a Moroccan convert in Yerushalayim, who had his mila. He was circumcised. And then he wasn't well enough to immerse in the mikvah, which is the completion of the conversion process. And it was Shabbos. So he asked, should I break Shabbos? You know, generally speaking, we say conversion isn't finished until both, you know, mila and tevila, circumcision and immersion in the mikvah, have happened. But does that apply to this halacha as well? And the rabbi in the Beit Din said, yes, you have to break Shabbos. And he had him write his name on Shabbos. And the other rabbis in Yerushalayim and rabbis in Europe got involved in this controversy, said, that's absurd, that can't be. It's one thing to say a Gentile can't keep Shabbos. He had a circumcision for the sake of conversion. He is like half a step away from being Jewish. Like, what possible problem is there for someone in that position? And Yaakov Ellinger, one of the major poskim of this era, so he really defends the idea that he should have kept Shabbos. And he quotes that was apparently the contemporary minhag. I have not asked Rabbi Reis. I don't know what they do nowadays in such circumstances. I imagine there are a few days between the mila and the immersion. I can't imagine it's the same day. So I'm sure they have to have some procedure. I imagine that they do not tell them to break Shabbos. And a little bit, I'll mention, we noted this line in the Midrash, in Dvarim Rabbah, says, Gentile until circumcision can't keep Shabbos. But once you have one bris, you have a brit milah, you're part of the covenant, so Shabbos is another bris. So you're going to say you have one bris and you don't have another one yet? There's no halfway point. You're committed or you're not. And the milah is the commitment, And that's enough to say you're allowed to keep Shabbos just like a Jew. So, not relevant to most of us, but an interesting historical case worth reading in its own right in source number 11. The final one, and this is the one I find most interesting because it's most challenges our baseline assumption. Right? You could walk to someone sitting in the yeshiva and ask, can a non-Jew keep Shabbos? And they would say no. But that doesn't seem quite accurate. This debate about this, so I'm presenting a simplified version of this, but for the sake of argument here, we could distinguish between two different kinds of non-Jews. They're regular run-of-the-mill Gentiles, and then there's what we call a ger toshav, literally a resident alien, but more properly, halachically, is a Gentile who has taken on some commitment in some more formalized way. Exactly how that happens is a literature for another time, to his seven mitzvot b'nei Noach. So if you're completely, idolatrous, or not even idolatrous, but you're not committed to the Jewish understanding of religion and the Jewish understanding of a relationship with God, so you can't keep Shabbos. But if you're a ger toshav, you're committed to our understanding of Torah. You're not Jewish, but you're committed to the mitzvot b'nei Noach. You're committed to the Jewish way of not being Jewish, which is kind of a funny way of thinking about it.
Because of that, I mean, you could ask anybody on the street and they said, is killing okay? Is stealing okay? Is taking a limb off of an animal?
Right.
They would all say, yeah. Most of them would say, yeah.
Some of them probably curse God more than we'd like, but
find people who are doing it not because it says that in the Torah. Does that matter?
So the Rambam thinks it does. The Rambam thinks that your motive should be conviction that it's true and not convenience or the fact that you like it or whatnot. That opens up a bit of a Pandora's box for us, which I'm deliberately leaving closed because it's too juicy. But there is a discussion about motive being a factor here. But and there's also a discussion about the process, how formal it needs to be.
Our values have seeped in. I mean, you can look historically, like Philo saying, where those values of don't kill and don't steal, theoretically. I mean, Amravi had his values also, but...
Yeah.
And the ger toshav, isn't that like the Kanani?
So right, the seven Canaanite nations we have to get rid of, right? We wipe them out. We're not interested in them.
They talk about the ger toshav. They talk about
It
doesn't matter.
It could be I'm not understanding what you're referring to, but I heard this great phrase once of vestigial mitzvot. The idea of mitzvot that were relevant when the Torah was given, but they've basically achieved their purpose in moving the world away from idolatry. So it's an interesting kind of language. And I think when you think about some of the impact we've had, a lot of the revolution associated with monotheism, that was our idea. We had a really great idea called monotheism that God told to Avram, or Avram figured out and then God told him. So that basically worked for the societies where we've had an impact. Right? If we've been there, we've had the ability to move the needle on that. That's been really successful. So Shabbos is an interesting example where we're kind of pushing back, but it seems like we've done a pretty good job for ourselves, in some sense, at least. So just back to ger toshav. So they're basically committed to understanding the relationship that we have with God and choosing not to go further, right? They're not becoming a ger tzedek, a full convert. They're converting just for the purpose of taking on their mitzvot. It seems like they understand our set of religious values. They're not concerned about tricking us or deceiving us. So it seems like a ger toshav should be able to keep Shabbos. And there's a breita in source number 12 in Masechet Kritut that sounds very much like that as well. It gives them parameters, whether a ger toshav should keep Shabbos like we keep Yom Tov, should keep Shabbos like we keep Chol HaMoed, or just not need to worry about Malacha at all. Okay, worrying about the parameters, not for now, but just to know that maybe there's this exception, that Rashi and Yevamot as well, seems to think that a ger toshav is either obligated, or not obligated, at least has the option of keeping Shabbos. And there are those who argue, Tosfos seems to argue in Masechet Yevamot, but... there's at least that thread that we see. And the Bir Halacha, which is the Mishnah Berurah in source number 13, says, forget a regular ger toshav, there are different categories of ger toshav. In fact, the ger toshav, when he says, I'm committing to this part of the Torah, these seven mitzvot, could add whatever mitzvot he wants. So you could be a ger toshav who keeps the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach and Shabbos. Or you could be one of the ger toshav who keeps the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach and Shabbos. And you could choose to add Shabbos to your commitment. And if you do, then you're allowed to keep it. I think the spirit here is, again, if you're committed to our understanding of religion, our understanding of God, our understanding of our relationship with God, and you're not trying to undercut that, and you have some positive religious value associated with keeping Shabbos, so then you're allowed to do so. So if this is right, if a Ger Toshav really can keep Shabbos, then that leaves a lot more room for, I think, what we would naturally feel a little bit more comfortable with. I feel we'd naturally, at least in our context, not everyone would share this intuition, but I think we'd naturally want the opportunity, the spiritual ability of Shabbos to be available to people. And so if there are different ways to show your commitment and not trying to undercut Judaism, but trying to find your place in a Jewish understanding of the world, that may make it a little bit easier to kind of sit with this halacha. You know, those who reject our understanding of Torah, reject our understanding of Shabbos, reject our understanding of God, they're the ones who can't keep Shabbos. But the closer you are to being in the fold, the more licensed and the more comfortable we are with you. And I think that points a direction towards, if you want to talk about our vision, our long-term goal in Or LaGoyim, or the impact we want to have, the transformation of general society. So we see that, and it's articulated very nicely, and we'll end with this, in the Navi in Yeshayahu, in source number 14. We read this on Friday. It's not so often you get to see your Nevi'im read in shul, but very conveniently, it's off Torah for fast days. For fast days. And it describes those who feel separated from God's people, those who feel distant. And in describing sort of a long-term, we would call it an eschatological vision, a vision for the end of days, a vision for the future, what we want to develop in the world. So jumping to Pasuk Vav, in the Hebrew or the English, Uvnei ha-nechar ha-nilvim al-Hashem, the foreigners who are drawn after God. So some say that refers to converts, but it need not. It could refer to a Ger Toshav. It could refer to those who are committed to God the way we are, just aren't Jewish. L'shar to, to serve him, ul-ha-avad Hashem, et shem Hashem, and to love him, li'ot lo l'avadim, to be his servants, kol shomer shabbat mechal alo, u'machazikim b'vriti. They keep Shabbos from desecrating it and don't reject God's covenant or undercut God's covenant, but find their place in it, their machazik in it. So if that's the right way to understand Yeshayahu, which is debatable, is exactly what he means, what kind of person is he referring to, but you get a sense that at the same time as when the Mikdash becomes a place where all nations can serve God, so it also becomes a time or a place where all nations could participate in Shabbos. Not subverting our relationship with Hashem, but complementing it, finding their place in a relationship with Hashem. I think that idea of Ger Toshav really dovetails well. If you're committed and you recognize our role and recognize the space that uniquely Jews have with Shabbos, then it's a space that they could partake and participate in themselves as well. Okay, so just to recap, we saw a basic theme that we see in Davening, which is the theme in Shabbos morning of Gentiles being excluded from Shabbos. We saw four justifications for that. And we saw a couple of exceptions that maybe push back on, well, if the motive is about recognizing, something about recognizing our unique relationship to Shabbos and the truth of our religious convictions, so the pushback is, well, if you accept those also, maybe there's an exception, maybe there's room. I actually have to add one more note, because this is a great note about the Shabbos Siddur as well, while we're doing the world of Shabbos. So the passage I mentioned in Shabbos Davening is from Shabbos morning. And interestingly, right, unlike Yom Tov, where the Shmoneh Esrei is the same, Mariv, Shacharis, Mincha, on Shabbos there are three different Shmoneh Esreis. Rabbi Sachs, and others also, but Rabbi Sachs associates each of these Shmoneh Esreis with a different idea or aspect of Shabbos. Friday night is the aspect of creation. It's the beginning of Shabbos, the beginning of the world, and there's no reference there to non-Jews not keeping Shabbos, because from the perspective of creation, there's no problem with that. They were created just as much as anyone else. Shabbos morning is revelation, God's involvement in history, God's providence, God's involvement in Yetziat Mitzrayim, and that's where the pushback exists. You're not part of that relationship with God. You reject that participation of God in history. In the Shabbos mincha, you have Ata achad v'shimcha achad. That's redemption. That's the end. There also, we don't have a limitation, and we haven't said Ata achad v'shimcha achad. You are one, and it seems like oneness. This idea that we're trying to approach a world where God is one and there's a universal recognition, and there again, we don't need to have that limitation on non-Jews participating in Shabbos, because when we're all recognizing that Shabbos, what Shabbos is and what Shabbos means, then we're less worried about the risks that we've discussed today. Okay, that was a little longer than I intended, but thank you very much.